I said last Sabbath that we were going to backtrack a little bit, try to go through again, not in detail, because we went through chapter 13 and 14 and 15, but I want to go through now, and because what happens, the meaning of these words and where they're going and how it's happening has a great impact, I should say, on understanding, my personal opinion, okay, how God thinks and how God acts and why he does what he does. Although sometimes we don't see it until many thousands of years later. And we see a parallel. Then we begin to understand the actions of God, who had, in a sense, as Jeff said, there's no plan B. It's always been a plan A, but nothing else. But before we go there, I want to finish chapter 15, which I did not go through, and I will go through it later on in more detail. At the latter part of chapter 15, and it's when verse 22 of the book of Exodus, by the way, let you know, far as I am concerned, this is my opinion, from the 12th chapter to the 20th chapter in the book of Exodus is the most fascinating section of the entire book of Exodus. And so because it's fascinating to me, you're going to have to be burdened, if I use that word, be going through an awful lot of that in detail, because I find it paralleling so much in relationship not only to the Messiah's time, but also to us in this time, and how God has and did and will continually working in the pattern and the format that he has always planned to do so. But on the 22nd verse of Exodus, 15th chapter, now it says, Moses brought out Israel from the Red Sea, and they went out of the wilderness to a place called Sur. I'm not going to explain that word today. And they were 3 days' journey, what's called the wilderness. Remember, they were at a certain place. We'll talk about that when we go back a little bit. And the word wilderness is you. We'll try to explain in a quote a different point of view of wilderness in a quote that I think it personally affects us. And he found no water there. Now remember, it is 15th chapter, verse 22. He led them every place where God... Remember, the cloud moved, they moved. When the cloud didn't move, they stayed. When the cloud stopped moving and stayed there, guess what? They didn't move. They stayed there until the cloud decided to pick up and go. So every location, including the first one, and the second one, and the third one, all the way to 40 of them in the book of Numbers, they didn't move and go until the cloud moved and then stopped. So everything is under whose control? Moses's? No. That's under the cloud. The cloud made the movement, and they had done exactly what the cloud told them to do, which is kind of interesting. We'll get in the book of Genesis, Numbers much, much later.
What part of Numbers?
I'm sorry, what? It starts in almost the very beginning of Numbers. About all the, he lists a series of all the stops, starts, stops, stops. They're called encampments for English reasons, but in Hebrew it means they departed from this place. They departed from this place. They departed from this place. That's a Hebrew phrase, and I'm not going to go into that right now today. But anyway, he led them to a certain place. 3 days' journey from where they had been at on after they crossed over the Red Sea, and they stayed there that day. Then they had a journey, and it took 3 days' journey to go someplace. And the place they went to, the water was poisonous. It was deadly. You drank it, you get sick to the point of sickness, and maybe even to the point of death. Now, God led them there for a reason. And they partook of the water, and then they couldn't, and guess who got blamed? Moses got blamed, right. Now, then, verse 25, and he, that is Moses, cried unto Yahuwah, and Yahuwah showed him a tree. Don't ask me what it was. The Bible didn't explain what it is. You can speculate here, speculate there, guess here, guess there. That's fine. Do all the guessing you want. I haven't got the slightest idea what it was. And I'm not going to try to even guess what it is. Or branch, or leaf, I don't care. Some people translate that differently, that's fine. I have no idea. I'm not that smart. Which he had cast into the waters, and the waters were made sweet. There he made for them a statue. Ooh. There he made to them a statue and an ordinance, and there he proved them. It wasn't Moses that proved them. Of course, it was God. This should be capital H. There he, God, made for them a statute and an ordinance, and therefore he, God, proved them. Moses wasn't in the job of proving anybody. As God always says, I will prove you out. I'll test you out. I find out what you're made of. And lo and behold, this is strange thing. What is the ordinance? What is the statute? Verse 26. This is the ordinance. If thou wilt diligently hearken unto the voice of Yahuwah, thy Elohim, and will do that which is right in his sight, and will give ear to his commandments, and keep his statutes, which they have not yet received, I will put none of these diseases upon you, which I brought upon Egypt. For I am Yahuwah that heals you. Now he got them there, and they didn't get sick because the devil got them sick. They didn't drink this poison water because Kalosha did a bad job and dirtied the water as they tried to build the roads. Nothing like that. It is God did it. Then God healed the waters. He healed the waters. Is that interesting? That which was polluted is no longer polluted. I'm sorry, what?
L-E-P-A.
EPA. Then that's why it's very important to know that this is very unusual. The very first place they left after they crossed the Red Sea was still a place where God got them sick. 3 days later. After they crossed the Red Sea. One, two, three. Interesting. Interesting phrase. And then, of course, from there, it says they came to Elam, which means palms. Land of palms. We'll talk about that not today. Once there were 12 wells of water and 70 palms or 70 trees, and they encamped there by the wells. Now, they didn't say how long they camped there. I'm not interested in that particular point because the 16th chapter tells us something else. But we're not in the 16th chapter. So basically, I want to begin to tell you how that everything that has happened so far, we know that God is directly involved in everything that happened in Abraham's life. We went through the book of Genesis in quite detail. Everything happened in Noah's life, God was involved. Everything that happened in Isaac's life, and in Lot's life, and in Joseph's life, and Jacob's life, and in the life of the women, and in the life of Esau, the life of every man that's mentioned there and every woman that's mentioned there, God is directly involved with something, with them. They are not necessarily, quote, involved with him. He is involved with them. Now, listen to what I'm saying to you. Now we're at the point where Israel has left Egypt. Now, did they leave because they were involved with the creator of heaven and earth? Or did they leave because God's involved with them? That's a question that's very important to know. Because that is how God works. He didn't call them or deliver them because they were such great people, upright people, decent people. They were just people. Ordinary people. Some were good, some were not. Some did better, some didn't do very good. Some were successful, some were not. just like we have here in our world. Let's backtrack a little bit. Let's go to Exodus 13th chapter. We're backtracking. I said we're going to backtrack. I said yesterday we're going to back, last week we're going to backtrack a little bit on the 13th, 14th, and 15th chapter a little bit. But I want to go through this. The Feast of Weeks started when? When did the Feast of Weeks start? Actually, the 15th day. Right. When you ate that Passover, remember, was eaten at night. We read that before. Passover was eaten when it was nighttime, not daytime on the 14th. It was killed on the daytime of the 14th, but was eaten at nighttime. All right? And it says there, they ate the meat, they ate the Passover at night. So, and on that night, which is really the beginning of the 16th day, that's why God says, remember the 15th day, 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 over and over again. He says, remember the 15th day. I brought you out of bondage.
What day was that?
Of the first month. Just to keep it clear, you know. We'll probably will do that. The sun goes down by the time we'll be eating at Passover. I'm not in charge of the how Passover runs. Somebody else is going to be, probably my wife and a lot of women. They generally do that part of the job. Because I'll tell you the honest truth, they do a better job than I do. I'm just a quick, fast guy. Okay, get there. Go back home. No. So let's go back here on the 13th chapter. And he said, Yahuwah has spoken to Moses. We read this last week. Sanctify me, the firstborn, whosoever comes opens the womb among the children, both male and of man or beast. It's mine. And we talk about sanctification. Now what does sanctification mean? In a simple words.
Set apart.
Set apart for a reason. There have to be a function of why he set them apart. Do you know why he set them apart?
Because they have to be holy.
What?
Serve.
Okay. And what function? Well, in the book, and a function as a priesthood. And he substituted the firstborn. We'll get that in the book of Numbers. That's why it's called Numbers. And we substitute the numbers of the firstborn, all right, firstborn of the men, the boys, and substituted all of them from all the tribes. They're all added up, all counted up, and the firstborn of the Levite. And there was more of them than there were of the Levites. I can't remember what the order is, but they had to pay a little fine because they were short. Anyway, we won't go there today. But they would become what you call the priesthood. Now, I know that in modern 21st, 2nd century, which one we're in, I get all confused. That's how when you get old, you get confused. It's not the priesthood of Catholicism, not the priesthood of Mormonism, not the priesthood of Leviticalness, it's not the priesthood it's a different kind of priesthood. Now, Messiah is our high priest, right? What was his function? Yes?
He was the mediator, and he became our high priest.
Right.
And the sacrifice. Sorry, he did a lot.
So
do the women get to do that too, or is that just the men?
Just the men. And so, and the only, of course, unclean animal, in a quote, was the donkey. We talked about that last week, why the donkey is considered important in the story, because they carry what's called the burden. They carry the yoke. They carry the hardship. They actually carry, in a sense, put it this way, the law. Put in simple words. And so now we have here in verse 11 of 13, "And it shall be when Yahuwah shall bring thee into the land of Canaanites, he has sworn unto thee and to thy fathers, he shall give it to thee, that thou shalt set apart unto me, unto Yahuwah, all that open the womb, and every firstling that comes from the beast which thou hast, the males shall be mine." So now, of course, this was going to happen when they entered into the land, which didn't occur until 40 years later. Okay, so it didn't happen immediately. But on this particular day, he said he had Moses set aside the firstborn that particular time of the men, and that clarifies it more in the book of Numbers, which we don't need to go today. Now he talked about this, about the donkey, and have redeemed with a lamb. Now, how do you redeem your firstborn son? Correct. Basically, it's a blood sacrifice, and it, whatever it was. Now, for it was not always the lamb or the goat that was used to redeem the firstborn. Remember the Yeshua? It was a bird. Because she didn't have anything. She wasn't a farmer. She wasn't a rancher. She was the wife of a carpenter. Her husband was a carpenter. Anyway. And he says, now, why must the lamb be killed? What says there, right? To save the life of the donkey who's carrying the burden. All right? So as we go into these 13th, 14th, and 15th chapter, there's a picture here that really lets us know. So the question comes, we already asked that question, I know, how do you redeem your firstborn son? What if you don't? What happens if you don't redeem your firstborn son?
They'll die. Not part of the kingdom.
Not part of the priesthood. They're exempt from it. They're no longer part of the holy, quote, priesthood that God is setting up. All right? Simple as that. They're removed from the count. Yes.
But remember when Abraham's son wasn't circumcised, the angel of death came in and the wife quickly circumcised him?
Yep. But the verse before it tells you what, why that happened, okay?
Maybe I missed that.
We won't go in there today because, but anyway, there has been no death sentence for 40 years. In the wilderness, no one was circumcised. Wait a minute. Isn't that the death sentence too? No. There's no death sentence for not being circumcised. Why was it with Moses, the son? Because what God had in mind to tell people about the firstborn of Egypt. Make a dent. Because Moses was told that in advance. Remember the first time he was on the mountain? God told him, I'm going to take the firstborn of Egypt and kill him. Firstborn male. So Moses was aware of that. Now just because she didn't like the order didn't mean that it should not be carried out. It's like she had to, in a sense, submit to the word of God, whether she wanted to or not. So they left, and the first place they went to was a place called Sukkot, right? We know what that means, temporary place. And that's where they're sanctified, on that place. We may have a good understanding of what that the lamb that was used for Passover. Remember, Passover, a lamb was used. And we picture that. This is what God later on calls, it's my blood sacrifice. It's not yours, it's mine. But here, now they're alive. Right? There's no need, quote, in a quote, for a death of a lamb to save their lives. The life has already been saved or delivered from the death that God put upon them. Right? Now comes this lamb, has to be used to redeem, to buy back. Basically, when you mean redemption, means to buy back. That means something that belonged to you no longer does. In order for you to take possession of it, what do you have to do? You have to buy it back. And generally speaking, how do you buy back your son? He says you must redeem your firstborn son. You could buy your son back. Well, you buy it with a lamb or turtle doves or any other animal that God accepts in the purchasing of. Now, what does that do? Does that free the son from something? Or does it free you from something? So when we buy back something, I mean, have you ever redeemed anything in your life? Bought something once you had to turn around and buy it back again? Maybe a car, maybe a house, maybe a loaf of bread. You might have done that. That's called redemption. But basic redemption, biblically speaking, refers to relatives of a male or somebody who is connected in relationship to that individual person. Now, with that in mind, now Elohim, since he said, I have bought you. You were mine. Then you were no longer mine. And I bought you back by the death of the firstborn of Egypt. He redeemed them by killing the firstborn of Egypt. The lamb that was used for Passover was not the redemption price. The redemption price was the sons and the animals, the firstborn animals of the land of Egypt.
Can you say that?
Now, sorry, what?
Can you say that again?
The price of redemption, when he says, I bought you back, they once were theirs, and now he sent them down, remember, to Egypt 400 years earlier. Now he's going to buy them back. And he's like, I'm going to buy you back, and I'm going to pay the debt by taking the firstborn of Egypt, killing them, the firstborn of the animals, and killing them. Now I'm buying you back. Okay? The lamb for Passover was not the redemption. What was that lamb representing? The what? Blocking the wrath of God. All right? But biblically speaking, New Testament, what does that lamb represent? The one who takes away the sins of the world. That's what that represents. It's not redemption. It takes away something. It removes a penalty. Yes? Correct. And did he pay a price?
Yeah.
Redemption always has to do with buying something back. Yes?
So Egypt's firstborn is the sin payment?
No. It's a redemption payment, not sin payment. Redemption payment. The blood of the lamb on the doorpost was the removal of sin. All right? They were worthy of death, just as the Egyptians were worthy of death. But the one who removed, plainly, the death sentence from the firstborn was the Lamb. Okay? That's what the Messiah represented. He didn't represent the redemption of Egypt being pulled out of bondage. He only represents that part. Do you understand what I'm saying? I haven't found scripture any other way that the Bible explains what that's about. Other lambs being used, other goats being used, other, you know, bulls being used, other goats being used. I got a picture of that. But wait a minute. What is this lamb that a prophet in the New Testament, who is the spirit of Elijah, said? Those are pretty powerful words, don't you think? Very powerful. It's a way of looking at things, okay? We'll talk about the connection of a donkey much later and what it also represents, but not today. In verse 17 of Exodus 13, verse 13, it came to pass that Pharaoh let the people go, okay? Least perhaps the people repent and go their way back to Egypt. No, God sent them on a different route. Now, let me ask you a question. Now, just think about it. You don't have to answer it. If God had the power to weaken the most powerful nation at that point in time by killing the firstborn, why couldn't he take them on this journey that was easier trip and just eliminate the army on the way? Makes sense, right? Why don't you just wipe them out? But he didn't. They were on the edge of what's called the wilderness. Now, I can tell you what I think it means. I guess I might spell better. And when you, as an individual person, when you start walking the way God wants you to walk, was it a world where you were once in? It's a world in which flesh and blood cannot enter. In a sense, God himself is the wilderness. You're entering into his world, and it's a world of wilderness. What's there for you? There is no home, there's no housing, there's no food, there's nothing there. And why did you walk this way? Why did you come to a place that you've never been before? Well, you have wonderful things like I do. We have wonderful hindsight. We just read scriptures and not understand it. But if you were back then, those days, you say, why did you get me sick for? And he said they might return back to Egypt, not physically, but within their heart. Yes, he could have wiped out the enemy. I mean, God could wipe out enemies left and right for us, right? Now, Israel, as we go on the story, not today, but as they entered in and headed toward Mount Sinai, what did they have to face before they went to Mount Sinai? A war. A war. They had to face the enemy. They had to face that was going and had was going out to literally kill them. God did not intervene and wipe them out. God had to have Joshua do the battle and wipe them out. Yes.
I think maybe another reason that God didn't send Israel to basically confront the Philistines is because the Philistines were not on God's list of enemies. You know, we hear again over and over again about, you know, the Perizzites and the Jebusites.
That's very true.
Philistines are not on that list, so God didn't have a bone to pick with them.
No.
Maybe not to the degree that he may have had a bone to pick with those others. I'm not saying he loved the Philistines and what they were doing. It's just that, you know, they weren't on the list right now to deal with. He had these other groups.
The issue is the Israelites would turn back. That's the issue. Would you turn back if danger was at your face? Well, yes, of course. But remember, he didn't lead him that way. He led him across this peninsula. You remember the name of the place? It's called Etam, or Etan, which means nothing more. It has two meanings to it. The basic thing, it was a fortress. It was an Egyptian word. Basically, it was a fortress on the edge of what's called the wilderness, where people didn't live. You didn't go there and live. It was just too rough, too unseemly. If you're familiar with the Sinai Peninsula, how many trees out there? How many wonderful barrels of water out there? Was there a community out there that where hundreds and thousands of people live? It's pretty sparse land. Today it's still sparse. They don't want to go there. That is that peninsula. So we're coming into this point. We're stuck in here. And God is testing them out to find out whether or not they'll do something. And they went into the land. And the places they went, when they went to Etam, the very next statement says, the next place they left or met was at a place. Clear across the other side of Mount Sinai. What was the name of that place? Remember? Pihahiroth. Pihahiroth. Basically just means the mouth of caverns or the mouth of a gorge. Now, what is a gorge? We have an awful lot of them right here, don't we? In California? What's a gorge? It's when, there's an indentation. Something happens. Now, when you really look at the Sinai Peninsula, which I will show sometime in the future, you'll actually see a waterway or two rivers coming. And they go all and come out, both meet at that point. It's like a delta. But those were dried up now. They didn't exist. Now, they were to face certain place. And he says now, I want you, verse 14th chapter now, real quick. Verse 1 and 3. And Yahuwah spoke to Moses, saying, speak of the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before this partakes or in this place called Pahahorit. Between, a place called Migdal and the other place called Baal Shephon. And between the sea and Migdal. It's kind of hard to picture this, Now, the name of that one that's called Baal Shephon, it really means the Lord of the North. So, that's north. You got the picture? And down here is south. Migdal, which means nothing but a lot of mountains. And they were to be between that place and the sea. So they weren't actually at Migdal. They were in between the two places. They were right there. The big mountain called Lord of the North was north. And so there they were. They were to stay there. And of course we know what took place. God moved the cloud. And the Egyptians went out after them. Remember? Go kill them. Now, it's a funny thing, because God said, I will kill all the Elohim of Egypt. What is this last one? Baal. Turn quickly to Isaiah, the 14th chapter. But before we turn there, I want you to listen to something. This will be Isaiah 14th chapter. And Pharaoh knew they were going to be entrapped. They couldn't get by. Now, we talked about this word. Oneness is a tower. In Egyptian, means abundance of hills. That's the big doll. And the sea, which is located opposite a place called Baal Sephon. In other words, you're not looking at it. You're at the other end of it, and that's over there. The big doll's over here. The sea's right there. And that's where you're at. So you're kind of south, but not all the way south. You're not north, because you're opposite end. Now, this is very fascinating about these things, because certain things were said. Let's go to Isaiah 14th chapter, starting in verse 12. Very famous name, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How thou art fallen, O son of the morning, basically. How are they fallen, O, we call him Lucifer, the light bringer. How hast thou cut down to the ground? You did weaken the nations. For you have said, and this is in Isaiah's time, we're not talking about that time of the Messiah, I mean time of Moses. For thou hast said in thy heart, I will ascend to the heaven. Very carefully now, listen to the wording. I will exalt my throne above the stars of Elohim. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation, being ruled over them, in the sides of the north. Oh. Why? I'll ascend above the heights of clouds, and I'll be like the Most High. Why is it here in the book of Isaiah, he says, I'll ascend to the stars of the north? Why not the south? Why not the east? Why not the west? Well, what is north? Yes. I will be like the Most High. What was Lucifer's goal?
He wanted to be God.
He wanted to take Elohim's place. Where is Elohim's throne? Oh, it must be south. Oh, it must be north. Oh, it must be west. Why would he head north to take over the throne of Elohim if Elohim's east or west or south? Elohim is north. Elohim is north. We're talking scripturally here, not physically. And he says, thou shalt be brought down to hell. I'm going to kill you. You're brought down to the grave. We don't like that. We think Satan lives forever, but not according to God. Into the sides of the pit. That they will still see you and look upon you and say, is this the, and it says the man. Isn't that odd? How could Lucifer, who was an archangel, how could he become a human?
God take away his everlasting life.
And he becomes like dust. Now, back in Genesis, what did he say about the serpent? Your food will be dirt. Both man is made out of dirt, and he's going to be in dirt. That's the simplicity of the matter. You don't have to accept that. You can make big things. I just find it very fascinating. It says, Baal Sephon is the north. Lord of the north, it says. That's what Baal Sephon means. That Lord is not at the far sides of the north. He wanted to go to the far sides of the north, according to Isaiah, but he couldn't. What did the Messiah say? I saw Satan fall to the earth. Oh, why didn't he throw him in the sun? Why didn't he throw him in the sun? Why didn't he throw him out there in Jupiter? What did he throw out there in some out galaxy we can't even see?
That's a good question.
Because that's not his plan. Yes.
Because he's going to use him. He's going
you
to
can use,
use
him. What does that tell us about God?
That he's got us in the wilderness. And
you're safe in the wilderness. You are preserved in the wilderness. Maybe you don't think of yourself like you're all alone. Maybe you don't think of yourself that you're one of the weird people that has an odd belief system. And you're all by yourself. And neighbor, family, brother, sister, they don't have anything to do with you. They think you're crazy. But you're in the wilderness. Are you safe? Yeah, you're safe. But in that wilderness, God teaches you some things you have to learn about yourself. No. To learn about him. Let this man be praised who says, I know the Lord. How many years do you think it's going to take you, or even me, to know everything about God? Well, lifetime plus.
That's why we're not going to die.
But God grants us inside information here, doesn't he? So, yes, you're in the wilderness. That's okay. You don't say, I'm only in the wilderness for a time being. These Israelites are in the wilderness for at least 40 years. That's a long 40 years. Interesting time slot. Time of testing. This Lord of the North never succeeded. He never went anywhere. Now, it's a funny thing that God said to Moses that the Egyptians, they are strangled in the land, in the wilderness, that has shut them in. That's exactly what Pharaoh said. And so Pharaoh thought he had the upper hand. I want to tell you something. This is my personal opinion. Most of us think the devil could get to us. He cannot get to us. Oh, the bad beasts are going to get to us. They can't get to us. According to Devarim Elohim. Oh, are they going to try? Of course they're going to try. Psalms 125. Go home and read it. 125. Very fascinating thing. But it says, God is not going to take away the unjust and bad person to protect the righteous. He's going to keep them on their case. Why? The next verse says, because if I don't, the righteous will start doing evil. Oh, that's interesting. We always have checks, and God's always checking us out. He always has to test us out. We'll be tested out until we're in the grave. Then, who knows, maybe on, I don't know. So we're at this point now that we're at, interesting, the 13th and 14th, yes.
Can I just ask a quick question? Is it, Father, when you start understanding more about Torah, is he the one that shows you the things you're not doing right?
Okay, let's talk about the word Torah. It's
that's
a good
kind
word.
Of like testing to me.
That's not what Torah means. The statutes and the commandments, yes. Torah has an entirely different meaning. It's what that word means, where it came from. What is the verb base of that word? Okay? I don't know if I have it in this writing or not. I think I do. The word Torah, we always translate it as though it means law or commandments. But it comes from a verb meaning basically to flow with. To teach with. To lead with. That's where the verb comes from. And it's like flowing from water. It's like flowing of the rain. It's like the flowing of the breeze. It's a gentle one. So when we look at Torah, it should not be frightening to us. It should be something we should look and God is flowing something to us. When God met Moses on the mountain the first time, he said, I will ya'ir. Ya'ir is the verb for the word Torah. I will ya'ir the words. I will ya'ir what for you to say. I will ya'ir, you ya'ir unto Aaron the words I'm saying to you. I'm teaching you, I'm explaining to you, I'm flowing to you. Remember, Moses was the one man that God says I talk face to face with. And so we have here where the Torah has been, quote, I'm very careful to say I'm not really what you call a Torah observant person. That is, in case, oh, I obey the law, obey the law, obey the law, obey the law. No, I'm, if anything, I want to listen to and to respond to the flowing of the words of Devarim Elohim. Because what did Yahshua say? You, man, must live by every word now that flows out of the mouth of God. That even the words of correction, the words of teaching, the words of admonition, the words of hope, the words of danger, the words of crisis, these come from Him. And so when I look at the word Torah, I don't look at it of, this is the commandment, this is the commandment, this is the commandment, this is the commandment. Or this is the mitzvah, this is mitzvah, 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 mitzvah. I don't look at it at that point. And it's like it's something, a deed that I must do. It's something that's given me from God that I get to do. Does that make sense to you? I know that word of God is powerful, is strong, and it's kind of very heavy many, many times. Depends on who he's talking to. Even when he got mad at Moses, he wasn't like going to kill him. He's not listening to me. And he repeats himself. And God says, when this is all over with, you will know who I am. That still, small voice. Daniel brought out one of the messages with Elijah. And John the Baptist was called the spirit of Elijah. What did John the Baptist do that made him have what's called the spirit of Elijah? Oh, he's the one that proclaimed and to the king of the world and all that, preached the gospel. No, what did he do? He's at the other side of Jordan. He is baptizing people. That's what he did. That's what he's of. That's what he represented. That's what it's all about. Why would he do that? He wasn't waiting for them to become righteous. They came to him because they knew something about God. That God will wash away your sins. I'm almost finished here. I want to go a little bit in the 15th chapter. Not too very long. I want to clarify a couple of words, which go in much detail later on when we reach talk about Shavuot. We're still in Exodus, yeah. Now we're in the 15th chapter. I'm only hitting highlights of these chapters. I went into detail of the 13th, 14th, and 15th last week, remember? Yeah, so just a couple of words that we find fascinating, and I'll talk about them more in detail, but really quick, did I say 15th chapter? No. I'm going to get your mouth wet for next week. Exodus 16th chapter, verse 1, that's all I'm going to go to now, because next week we're going to be on the 16th chapter. But I want to talk about the first verse. Three interesting words are here. And they took their journey from Elam. That's the one that had the seven wells. Was it seven? 12 wells and 70 palm trees. And all the congregation of the children of Israel came into the wilderness of called place of Sin. Now, don't get that mixed up with the other word. This is spelt differently. And this word really means a thorny place, a place of clay. That's all it means. The wilderness is nothing there except dirt and hard, hard dirt stuff. And a place called Sinai. Sinai has a very interesting word. We'll talk about that more in detail next week. The simplicity of the word of Sinai is thorny. Now, in a wilderness of nothing, dry dirt, thorns, and clay, now in Mount Sinai, it's called the mountain of thorn. Thorn. It's got some stuff on there that hurts you. And biblically speaking, that's what took place on a spiritual level with the house of Israel. Okay, any questions? Any thoughts? Any input?
I'm glad to see the difference here between redemption and redemption and having the sins carried away.
At Passover time, at Moses' time, okay, that's where God says, I have redeemed you. But the Messiah is not dead yet, right? So what he redeemed him with is, I redeemed you with the firstborn of Egypt. Now, the blood on the doorpost represents the protection from the creator of heaven and earth. And what was he, that is the blood of the Lamb, what was it protecting? From death. Real simple, right? That's what it's all about. From death. You mean they were worthy of death? Yes. The answer is yes. Later on in prophets, it says you weren't even righteous or holy. It's all because I did with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. That's why I saved you, because of them. I didn't do it because of you. I didn't do it because you're righteous. I didn't do it because you're a good guy. You're good people, honorable people, respectful people. No, for 40 years, you don't know who I was. 400 years, I should say, didn't know who I was. Do you understand what I'm saying? Now, the Lamb is protecting the death sentence. And that's what the Messiah actually did for us. He took away the sins, which is the death of us.